Hello and welcome to another episode of Mike M's Weekly Reads. Last episode, I was talking about how my mic was working the first time I plugged it in. Well, it went back to normal. I was disappointed. It took like three tries to get the USB to register again. Are you going to go outside this time, Harley? Come on, we just got done dancing. Instead of taking her for a walk, I take her for a father-daughter dance every day. And today we went dancing twice. And for about a mile and a half. Could have went longer, but it was a little cold. This morning I only did a little bit because it was 0, feels like 2, -2. And now it was 33, feels like 20 something. And that's more tolerable. But the wind is a little harsh, and I am still having trouble breathing from the cough. So I said, screw it. I said, I'm not gonna do this. I'm gonna do a shorter walk. And my ears were cold, even though I was wearing a hat. So I was like, oh man. So today, more comics came in. I didn't open the boxes yet. I got a shipment from Reed. Got some Marvel team up to talk about. I haven't opened them yet, so it'll probably be in a future episode. And I got my DCBS order, which is always like Christmas because I don't remember what I ordered, and I get to open up the box and see what I ordered. I want to talk about two comics. It's going to be a shorter episode this week. Two back issues that I received this week in the mail, and these two I got through. Well, actually, I got a couple of them. I forgot to mention. I got the Empties Kickstarter, which I already read. It's amazing. If you look at the cover, it is it doesn't really represent the content except like when you get into issue two. But there's these potentially gummy things that could cause a zombie manifestation. But what this was solicited as is it was solicited as like zombies in a world that's, has some kind of contagion and what it does to relationships. And I absolutely found it fantastic. A matter of fact, I'm going to read it again because I tend to get a better experience with paper than I do digital. It just makes me love it, one grade higher usually, based on history. And the other thing I wanted to before I well let me talk about so I got the Empties. It was two issues. I'm on her distribution list, so I'm hoping they do some future issues because I really like this Kickstarter. I really support it. It's one of my favorite Kickstarters because it's in the horror genre. I absolutely find it amazing. Me and Bill on Geek Brunch promoted it on the show. We hope that it did well. It obviously got funded, so we hope that more people navigate to it and enjoy it as much as I do. The other thing that I read horror this week, and it'll be in a future episode, probably not next week, but the week after. Is Creeps. I got issue 17. I finally ordered the magazine from the back half of previews from a publisher called Warrant, and I've been temp it's not Warren, it's Warrant. And this Rich Salas guy, I follow him on one of his groups, I think I follow on Facebook, and he's a big Warren horror magazine fan, and he started his own fan comic based on that, and it's a magazine format. It's black and white. It's called The Creeps. The art inside is beautiful. The stories are very creepy, very entertaining, and I'm on board. A matter of fact, I'm going to add this to my pool, and I am contemplating going to their website. I think it's creepsmagazine.com. And see about getting some back issues because I found it just a really enjoyable comic magazine, and if anybody pays attention to my Twitter feed, I post everything that I get in stock pretty much. And when I post it, I post like as I'm getting close to a full run and that kind of stuff, so you can keep track of it all on Twitter. I also do it on the comic book page podcast Slack channel, because I of all the Slack channels, I feel like I'm at least a good contributor there, and people sort of listen to me. So other Slack channels, I don't think people really cared. So I never was, I don't know, successful or felt like more of the community. And I pretty much feel like the community mostly because, three or four members, but sometimes that's all it takes to have a really good discussion. But I want to talk about that podcast briefly. But before I do that, I want to talk about two recent purchases. One was a big purchase. I got a very fine condition of Marvel 2-in-1 Thing and Man-Thing. I've already read this issue digitally, and this was the only issue I needed to complete Marvel 2-in-1, and that includes all the annuals. Yes, Nick, it includes all the annuals. I have a full run of Marvel 2-in-1, I'm very happy to say. I got most of this through my friend Reed, who I've met through podcasting. Matter of fact, I think it was at a Heroes Con many, many years ago. And if I remember correctly, Reed will have to correct me. And we've met him before at that soul food restaurant, but I can't remember what the hell it's called. How could I forget that? We go there every year. Now it's gonna bug me. Mertz. Thank God I remembered that. That's embarrassing. I've seen him at Mertz. I usually see him as people are getting in line. I don't usually wait in line anymore. I'm at the point where the con is totally not about comics anymore. It's more about the community. It's more about me meeting up with friends, and I don't mind like being there 2 hours late, leaving 2 or 3 hours early, having a long ass lunch. I'm at the con less and less, especially when I'm at cons I'm more comfortable with, where like Heroes Con, which I go to every year, and Baltimore Con, those are my cons. I spend less and less time at the con. It's very different because I go to my own hometown cons and I have no friends. It's weird. All my friends are on the East Coast, all of them. I have some acquaintances, but they're not like really close friends that I've met over in the community. Everybody's pretty much on the East Coast. But ever since I stopped getting commissions, I've felt more in a Zen state at a con. I felt calmer. I used to love getting commissions, especially when I first started going to cons, because they were sort of affordable. They started off at $30 and were like $20, $30 for really good artists. And then they became $60, and then they became $100, and now some of those are $300 or $150 for a headshot, and you're like, holy fuck. And then they overbook themselves, so you have this stress, are they gonna finish it? And you don't know the disappointment when you give your money on Friday and they don't have it on Sunday, and they said, I'll have to mail it to you. And then you have to deal with that stress because you already exchanged the goddamn money. Which I think sucks. But ever since that stress went away, and I don't feel like I have to, I don't even go to panels too much. I like pick and choose like two, three panels. And I like wandering around Artist Alley and hanging out with friends mostly, talking about all kinds of things, life and comics and what have you. Con life has changed for me dramatically. I do enjoy shopping on Sunday. I do enjoy getting one expensive, two expensive books, even though I know I could probably get it cheaper. I find some deals. I look online to see if I'm in the ballpark, and then I make a purchase usually. And I like to do it in the golden age world, because I could see it, I could feel it, I could see the stains, I could have them open it up, I could see if it smells. Some older comics you gotta be wary of. You don't want it to have like a mildew smell, because it could look like an awesome comic book, and it could have a funk to it. You don't want that smelling up the rest of your comics, you know, because newsprint will soak up that stuff. Even if it's in Mylar, it'll still soak it up. That's why they say never put your comics in the garage, because you'll get a gasoline or oil or exhaust smell in your comics, especially with the older comics that are newsprint. Matter of fact, I ordered a very disappointing, really nice shape full run of The Fly one time, and I was like, what, these comics are amazing. And I opened up the box and I'm like, what is this goddamn smell? It smells like fucking gasoline. So it was awful, and there was like no get it, there's no saving that. Where was I going with that? Oh, I picked up that Marvel 2-in-1 Thing and Man Thing, and I was very happy to pick that up. And the other issue, which I could say I have a full run of, but I'm kind of cheating because there's only one issue of it, is DC Comics published one issue of Laurel and Hardy, and it's Larry Hama's Laurel and Hardy issue number one, and there's only one issue, so I could say I have a full run of Laurel DC Laurel and Hardy. And I've been trying to get this comic book for maybe about 5 years, and not really hard though. What I do is I usually go to mycomicshop.com, I put it in my want list, and I wait for them. And I usually get an email, and sometimes by the time you get to your email and then you get online, it's gone because they only got one copy. But I haven't got a notice on this book in since I put a want list in there. So I was just thumbing through some comics in my database, and I was like, I really want this issue, and I'm tired of waiting. I think I waited enough years, 5 years. I am going to go to eBay and find it, and I found it for a good price, and there was quite a few of them out there. Surprised to see. And I was very happy with the shipment, very happy with the condition. I was very happy with the Marvel 2-in-1, because you never eBay, you can zoom in and scan it and still not get a feel for really what the condition is. I love when sellers grade books like me. What I mean by that is I don't want to deal with the bullshit. So usually what I do is if I think a book is near mint, I grade, say very fine, 9.0. If I think it's very fine, I grade it a fine. I always go one lower so I don't have to deal with the bullshit. I love when other sellers do that. I think my comic shop, that's why I go there a lot, is I think they're very fair with their grading. I've never been disappointed. Those are the purchases. The other thing I wanted to talk about is this is just sort of a shout out to a colleague, I would say. He's not a good friend, but I've been listening to his podcast since it started. Actually, it goes farther back than that. I've been listening to the Mayo Report since it started on Comic Geek Speak. So that was a long time ago, and this is to John Mayo. We don't talk a lot. I think I always talk to Bob a lot more than I did John, because Bob Retall was on the podcast. He owns the Guinness Book of World Records for most comic books reported, I'd say. But John Mayo, I've been listening to this podcast. There's very few podcasts that I've listened to since the beginning, and Comic Book Page is one of them. And I have talked to him online before, as he used to have these Skype call-ins. He still does, but I don't call into him anymore. He'd have these previews call where we'd just chat. Man, it would last long back in the day. Like, I'm talking about like a Friday night, maybe 4 to 5 hours. And you could call in at any time and just join in on the conversation. And he still has them. And that's kind of what I knew him from. I've gone to San Diego Comic-Con 2 years in a row, and he goes to them, and I never hooked up with them or really aggressively tried. I was overwhelmed with San Diego. There's just too much input. There's too much stimuli. And it really is a different con to experience. I did meet up with Tim Terrell at one of the cons. That's the only time I ever remember meeting up with somebody at a con. I mean, it's a con that big. And that was a great experience. But, where was I? Oh, yeah. So, John has been really good on his podcast about never missing an episode on his podcast. He's very retentive about making sure it's always on time, it's always a certain format, always has the same quality. Very unlike me. I do things because I feel like talking comics, and I'm very unprofessional. He's professional. He keeps everything in line, does everything, gets press passes. I never go for press passes. I used to at Baltimore Comic Con, and then when I was filling the questionnaires out and stuff, every year, and I was like, you know what? I'm not a reporter of comics. I am not press. I don't get a press pass. It was nice getting a press pass at Baltimore, I'll be honest with you. You get in there early. You got to move around early. It was free. You save money. You could spend that on comics. You'd have to report on it because the next year you'd have to say, oh yeah, I had this episode and this are my download numbers and all this, bullshit. And I realized, I'm not press, and I can afford a press pass and be like every other fan, because when it comes to comics, I'm really just a fan. But what I'm getting at is John's really press, I think. He reports, reviews comics like a professional, and it's formatted like a professional, unlike me. But over the course of the years, you get to know like certain mannerisms of the hosts, and you get to sort of know them even though you don't know them. And it was very he went on he's been going on a lot of vacations. He went to Japan last year with his family to meet more family, and but I don't think he went with his parents. And then he went with his parents to go see the Aurora Borealis, or the lights and the northern lights in the sky and stuff. And it was one of his father's kind of like bucket list. That's the way he worded it. On the Slack channel, he made a post, and he said, "This is my father's one of his bucket list items, and my father's not getting any younger, and we gotta do this, and it's gonna be fun. It's gonna be a nice family fun vacation." And things were going well. They were having a good time. And he would keep us statused. He'd send pictures in the Slack channel of various things that he did during the day. You get like one photo a day, if that, you know. And then there was a strange post, and I didn't absorb it, but one of the other listeners read something into it, and I was sort of shocked. They said that there was an accident or an incident on the plane, and they had to turn the plane around because there was health incidents. But I didn't really gather what that it was his own dad that passed on the plane. And I mean, my heart just goes out to him. This shit is awful. You know, you're with your dad, you're spending time with him, and you know he it passes. You know, your dad passes. You're on a vacation. You're calm. You're enjoying family time, and you're on a plane, and your dad is dead. I can't imagine. I can't comprehend what his sister, mother, and he went through. It's just heartbreaking, you know. And at the same time, it's like I don't know what to say to him. All I can offer is, you know, give him some financial support. And say, you know, I'm really sorry for your loss, but I can't really do nothing to make him feel any different. And I don't know, it's just it's a sad thing to experience. And then he had to stay overseas because I mean, he had to stay away because they had to deal with all this funeral stuff and still keep their composure because they have to, I imagine, get the body from one location to another and do all the death certificates, and I don't know. But life for him, imagine, especially his mother, and I don't know how close his sister was. But I imagine their whole lives are in sort of turmoil. So I just say my heart goes out to you. That's all I can say. And it does affect me as a listener, and I do feel for you. And I'd say I offer prayers and stuff, but I'm not really that religious. I'd be lying if I said that. I'll just say my heart goes out to you, my condolences. I know you loved your father. You could tell it in your voice as I listened to your podcast. I knew about this on the last recording, but didn't want to say who it was, and he announced it on his podcast, so it's out there for any listeners to listen to. And I just want to say, as an online friend, I'm really sorry, and I hope you can get past it. But at the same time, it is an amazing blessing, and it's not something that everybody can say happens when they lose a parent or some loved one. But you got to spend a week with your dad and be with him all that time. And that is as hard as it was, you know, like, and as horrible as the situation is on a vacation, it's kind of a blessing that you got to spend all that time with them. Because sometimes when loved ones pass, you don't get that time, and sometimes you're away, you're not even there, and you have to deal with the aftermath, but you're not there to see the smile on their faces. You know, you're not there to see, to laugh and to cry with them and to just cherish them on, you know, that there is a blessing. So as hard as that is, I mean, that is a it's a good thing. He died a happy man. He was there with his with you guys, and that is probably all you could ask for. He didn't die in a home. He didn't die by himself. He was there with his family, and that is a big deal. And I as bad as that situation is, if you could look at it like a blessing at the same time, because you got to spend that time with him. And that will probably be the worst vacation that you've ever experienced, but at the same time, you can think of it as a goodbye and a blessing, because I just I don't know. I don't know what else to say. But I feel bad for your mom and your sister and yourself, but especially your mom, 'cause I can't imagine being with someone your entire life and then losing that person. I just can't imagine. And I know I'm gonna have to go through this with my parents, and it's just going to just break me. It is gonna break me, I'll tell you right now. Because and I mean, when you know that you've been together that long, you finish each other's sentences, you know each other, you take care of each other, it's just an amazing thing. And to not have that, I am so sad for your mom. I don't even know your mom or dad, but I just can't. I just can't comprehend it. And I hope things are better for her, because she has you guys to deal with this. But it is life changing. It is life changing event, and I hope you get past it. And I'm sorry I got emotional, and I'm sorry I can't do more. I'm just a listener, and I've been there since the beginning, and I'll continue to listen if you put stuff out. Matter of fact, you put stuff, you never missed a week, even with this thing. And when I lost my co-host, I almost quit everything. I almost quit podcasting, and I'm glad I didn't. I really am not. I'm glad I didn't. And he would have never wanted me to anyway. But anyway, I am gonna snap out of this, especially before Barb comes home and sees me in tears. She freaks out when I get emotional. I always call her the heartless wench, because I'll be sitting there watching The Good Doctor and seeing something, and I'm real emotional. I just am. I probably got that from my mom. I cry at movies. Sometimes it's cry of joy. Sometimes it's just hearing Hulk smash, just those simple words like Hulk smash, and I get goosebumps and I shed tears. It's simple things like that. And sometimes it's watching a show and somebody has cancer and I get emotional. I am not afraid to get emotional as a man. A matter of fact, my dad never gets emotional, and when he was really sick, he was emotional. And I don't know if it was the drugs they had him on or what, but it was very weird, because I had never seen my dad cry ever. Even when he was in great pain, he was always the strong one, like a rock. And then me and my mom would be crying all the time. And then my brother is more like my dad. Yeah, he gets sad and he's not afraid to show his emotion, but he's a stronger one than I am. But I don't even know where I was going, but I'm gonna get back with some comic talk if you could bear with me, if you didn't hang up already and say, "What the fuck is this guy talking about?" But I think there's a handful of listeners out there that know me well enough. They know that I'm not afraid to get emotional. They've been listening to me for a long time. Shit, I've been podcasting almost since I 2006. Maybe 2005. Matter of fact, the only episode that I think, if I go to my actual website and I search for what I used to be my first podcast, which is Rocky Mountain Comic Book Noise. I think the earliest episode I have is episode 10. So maybe I wasn't from 2006. It was probably somewhere in 2007 I started podcasting. And I did lose some of those episodes. But I don't know where they went, because it must have been Derek switching a feed or something. And I probably have them on a hard drive somewhere. But I need to take a pause for a cause, and it's mostly to blow my nose because I got emotional. And John, we don't know each other, but I sort of feel like I do. And it's a little different than most of my online friends that I've met through podcasting, because most of them I talk to them like physically online a lot, and they're my co-host. Or, Daryl will call Barb and I'll hear his voice almost every week. And yeah, I'll be back in a bit. I'm gonna take a quick pause and be back with the Mike Weekly Reads. Actually, before I get into some of those weekly reads, I'm gonna get the adrenaline flowing in me, and I'm gonna open up with a few questions that I've gotten over the last few weeks, and I had them queued up. Okay, I'll start with Nick Wetmore. He says, two first quest comics questions. First, which first comics title would you say you'd like to make a comeback with a new series? First comics. So I gotta think about what's first comics. Was Sable first comics? Yeah, Sable. That's easy. Sable. I loved Sable and John Sable. Freelance, one of my favorite. I'd like to see that. Let's see what else. I have a few issues of Mars, which was sci-fi stuff, and it was very interesting. Maybe some of that. There's Sable. Warp was another one that I sort of enjoyed. I don't have all of them. I don't own a lot. Oh, Grimjack. So the two of them would be like John Sable, Freelance, and Grimjack. Those would be the first comics. Matter of fact, I think they're the most well-known ones. that an American flag. Oh, I forgot Badger. Badger was a very interesting book. It's about a crazy superhero. So if I had to rank them, it'd definitely be John Sable. Second would be John Ostrander's Grimjack. Third would be Howard Chaykin's American Flag. And fourth would be Badger. And then some of those other ones I mentioned. Mike Baron did Badger for First Comics. So those are my picks. Second, which First Comics titles could come back with a new series and actually watch successful in today's market or be successful? I don't think any of those could be successful in today's market. I mean, I think number one might open up with at most 12,000 copies. I don't consider that successful. And it's mostly because I think the people that were passionate about that are either not buying comics or they would not know about it to go out and seek it out. Yeah, I think it would take a lot, but we are seeing some of these come back in Kickstarters. I know Tim Truman is doing one. I'm trying to think of what the property was again. I can't remember. But so some of these characters are coming back, and you will see some issues. None of that I know of are first, but I see where you're coming at. The other question is, did you this is a good question, and it kind of did you ever read Beautiful Stories for Ugly Children? He said he used to love that series, and it was from Piranha Press. Piranha Press was an imprint from DC Comics, and he asked me, "Is this something you got to own?" And if I want to meet my goal, Nick, in the goal is to have every single DC comic since 1973, I would include it. But I will say at the same time, it's probably the lower priority. Because my priorities would probably stack up as DC proper, Vertigo, Wildstorm, and then other, like the Child's Line and other stuff that's kind of the way I would fill things in. And then this imprint, because it really is an imprint that's more like an indie line. So I would treat it as such. The other question you have is, it was really exciting to hear about your original Marvel graphic novels, magazine size purchase from Aaron Myers. And Aaron Myers did sell me most of the Marvel graphic novel, and I've since gotten issue 4 of graphic novel, which was the first appearance of New Mutants. I covered that on Geek Brunch Retrocast, so check that out. That was the first one I did a review on. No, actually, the second one, I lie. I did the Death of Captain Marvel review on a previous, I think, retro. So those are the two that I've sort of read, and I really, really did enjoy them. So I'm glad. I think I have about 4 to 5 left to complete. And then there's all these like miscellaneous graphic novels that are in the same size, but are not part of that series. And there's a slew of them. So even though I have like every single Daredevil comic ever published, there's probably some graphic novels in that format that I don't have. So I think you'll hear I want to read that Super Boxers one, and I think you'll hear that in an upcoming episode. The next question, I think I'll do two more questions. Who are your top five spies in comics? Wow, spies. That's tough. Well, I guess the most current spy that I collect and has an ongoing is James Bond. I'll consider him a spy. Going back to, I think it's a Fawcett character, Spy Smasher. I would pick him. Another spy I would pick, which he's like a spy problem solver, is Human Target. Matter of fact, I love the TV show and the comic. He used to appear in the back of Action Comics. Another one that was in Suicide Squad and was in the, I think he was in the back of Action Comics at one time. It was one of those books. Was Nemesis. And man, is there any spies in Marvel that I could throw out? Wow. I can't think of any. I guess I'll put Paladin in there. I guess you can consider him somewhat of a spy. I don't know. So I grasping at straws on the last one, and as you can see, all of the even Spy Smasher is a DC character now, with the exception of James Bond. Mike Grell did a James Bond book back in the day too, not for First, but for another publisher. I can't remember what it was, but those are my top five spies, and it could change because I do these off the cuff. I don't prep for them. So if you ask me the same question a year from now, I'll probably get Nemesis and Human Target. But Human Target isn't really a spy either. Like Nemesis more is, but Human Target is a problem solver sort of guy that uses disguise like a spy. I wonder if Spy versus Spy would count. Mad Magazine, owned by DC Comics. So the next one is a another question, and I'm gonna put a marker after the end of this one because this episode is running long. I didn't plan on crying. That's when I record this shit. Shit just happens. That's what my podcast is. I never have a plan. I never know where I'm going. I just know I'm talking comics in some form. What comic covers will always catch your eye and you can't help yourself to comment about on social media? That's a good question. And I know this is a good question for you because you'll see something and you react based on the cover. The covers that I mostly respond to are things that I remember fondly getting off the spinner rack. And one of the comics that I'll always, I mean, there's a couple of them, but I'll name one title that I'll always comment on, and that's Defenders. God, I love the Defenders so much. I will always comment on when I see a Defenders, or if I see Suicide Squad, I from DC, I tend to always comment on those. So those are my two answers. As far as artists, like specific art covers, I comment a lot on Eric Larson covers, like Savage Dragon covers. But I don't comment a lot on his Spider-Man work or his Aquaman work. I have it. But if I see a Savage Dragon, especially if he posts it, I'll comment on it. I like to comment on, I don't know, I can't really say like any specific writer that draws me in. I mean, or artist that I have to comment on. I like, there's so many of them that I love, but I don't feel like I have. Oh, if it's an OMAC cover. If it's an OMAC cover, I have to comment on it. So that's another comic character that drives it, especially a Jack Kirby OMAC. That's why I got into engineering, Jack Kirby's Kirby Crackle and technology. So I hope you enjoyed those. I hope they somehow brought you back into what Mike Ems really is. And after you hear me break down, it's somewhat embarrassing, but it's real. I keep it real on this show. And that'll take us into Mike M's Weekly Reads. So, I was tempted to do everything up to date, but I think if I read anything current, I don't want to ruin anything for somebody. So I'm going to always be a week off. So I'm only going to cover the books from how did this happen? Oh wow, okay. I'm in the aligned. I thought I was off by a date, like I was missing a week. But I really jumped ahead. So this is for the week of January 21st through January 27th. We had a total of 21 comics. We had two Waxwork, three Marvel, one Kickstarter, one Image, and 14 DC. There were no 3 out of 5s. They were all 4 out of 5s. I was in a really good mood this week, and things were just really clicking for me. So we'll start at the bottom. Poser number 3. This is from Waxwork Publishing. The main girl that's in the story is in a punk band, and then the punk band broke up, and there's a poser killer that's killing her friends. In this one, she's sort of almost killed by several posers or people posing as the poser, and she's with the guy that just got out of a prison, and the cops are out in force trying to find out who the poser killer. It's really confusing because the poser killer now appears to be multiple people, so you don't really know if it's people that are joking around, like if it's a scream situation or what's going on. But the guy that recently got out of prison is sort of suspicious to me. But I don't know if he's the guy. I don't know if it's just a weird coincidence. The next one is another Waxwork, 4 out of 5. It's House of Waxwork number 3. Two horror stories about sushi of the gods. Well, there are two horror stories. One is about sushi of the gods, and another is about necropants. It was a lot of fun, and I'm not sure if this is the last issue, but I think it is. I haven't seen anything solicited in Waxworks, which is a damn shame, because it's one of my top publishers of 2018 for sure. And I hope they don't go the wayside because of, like, I don't even know where they place on the top 100 or 300. I don't know how many fans of previews go back into that far back in previews. And but the sushi tale was about this father son, and the son wants to make sushi, and he finds this recipe for sushi in this like godlike script. And he has to like dive for this sushi, and he gets like millions of people coming to his sushi shop. The father knows he's up to no good, and it doesn't end well. And then the Necropants is sort of about a rock star that has these pants. And he dies, and one of the guys that I guess is a roadie or so for the band takes off his, basically skins the guy, and wears his pants, wears his skin and leather pants as outer garment, and becomes just as popular a singer as him. And that doesn't end well. So it's very much like a Tales from the Crypt or a Creepy or any of those. It's all in color, really good stories. Really enjoyed it. Be a shame if it doesn't come back. One of the things that me and Bill really liked about this is between the stories, they were introduced with like an 80s horror film type style. So it was introduced like a movie, really entertaining. I then read True Believers, Kirby 100th, The Mighty Thor, which reprints the first appearance of Thor in Journey into Mystery 83 and Loki's in 85. There's these rock-like aliens that are going to destroy Earth, but Donald Blake ends up finding the Thor hammer and is able to battle them. They leave because they think Earth is populated with people that have Thor-like powers. In the second story, Loki is imprisoned in a tree, and he needs someone to shed a tear for him in order to free himself. Luckily, he tricks Hamitable into shedding a tear because of allergies, that kind of thing, and actually breaks free to find Thor and his hammer and take away his hammer. He tries but fails, and Thor defeats him with water, which I found very interesting. I did not know this fun fact, that water was one of Loki's weaknesses. I have read the second story. I didn't remember that water was one of his weaknesses, but back in my college days, I bought the first appearance of Loki, and it wasn't in the best of shape. It was probably a VG minus, so I still own that one. I own 85. I don't own 83, and I read 83. God, I can't remember if it was in like a Son of Origins. There was a trade paperback, and I really need to get in the basement and get my old trades. These were trades before there were even trades, but they used to come out with these pocketbooks and Son of Origins, which were origins of the superheroes and stuff like that. And back in the day, we had a bookstore called B. Dalton Bookstores, and it was in the mall, and I purchased a lot of these there. And I still have them. And I think that's where I read the first Thor. I can't remember if it was in a pocketbook or if it was in one of like Sons of Origins or one of those types of books. I can't remember, but I did read it. So this is my second reading. 4 out of 5. Then I go into a DC kickoff. I started reading Demon Hell on Earth a few months back, number one, and I wanted to finish it. And this is where the little girl in number one turns out to be Merlin as they are trying to stop Hell from coming to Earth in Death Valley. Jason Blood is teamed with Madame Xanadu, Demon, and Merlin to try to stop the demon Belial. I don't know how to pronounce it. Belial, let's say that. It was very nice artwork by Brad Walker. Merlin gives all his remaining power to Ennegrin. Belial turns Lucifer into a wolf to fight for him. Demon defeats Belial and beheads him and is now in hell, and Jason Blood is no longer a ghost. At the beginning of the series, he was a ghost and sort of there, but Demon was there too. And he rides off into the sunset with Madame Xanadu. The little girl who was killed back with her family is now back alive, and she's leaving Death Valley with her family. I really like this series. Good little mini series from DC Comics. The next one is a Kickstarter. It's called Tata Rambo. It's sort of a true story. It's a great grandchild writes about his World War II great grandfather, Ramon. God, I can't remember. Awargi, I can't pronounce his name. and what he meant to the Mayo organization in Tucson, Arizona. So this issue sort of established his, like, took place in the current time and then flashed back to his grandfather and kind of told his grandfather's story, and all the politics behind what was going on there. There was a lot of politics. I really enjoyed it. I will support number two if I get that Kickstarter. He did deliver on time, which is exceptional in Kickstarters. And they probably had like a large family type following and people that want to know more about the Mayo organization. We have DC Primal Age, 100 page giant. This is the Target exclusive. Absolutely love this. This was fun. I read this when I was sick. I was sitting there in bed upstairs. I think I came home early. Barb wasn't here. Laid down in bed. Harley was there with me. And instead of being downstairs, it was still light outside, but I was ready for bed. And I said, I'm going to read this before I go to bed. And I just loved it. The first story is like a He-Man type story where Joker's like Skeletor and he has a group of characters, King Shark, Scarecrow, Mr. Freeze, and they're sinking Themyscira. And it's up to Batman, who's like He-Man, and his cohorts to stop them. Then there are like fantastic solo stories. One of them had Jerry Ordway art, and I love Jerry Ordway art. You had Louise Simonson writing, Jerry Ordway, I think Dan Jurgens. Fantastic group of teams telling many, many stories. One was about Wonder Woman and Solomon Grundy. I'm a big fan of Solomon Grundy, especially when I purchased a back issue magazine that had some spotlights on Solomon Grundy. I learned a lot, and I just became fascinated with this character. I've always liked him, but I even liked him even more once I read the article a couple years ago, maybe a decade ago. And then there was a Superman and Batman versus Bizarro, kind of like a world's finest, but in He-Man-ish world. And then there was the origin of Primal Age Batman and Mr. Freeze and a Joker Primal Age story. Really good story. All original content, Target exclusive, sold along with the toys. I didn't buy any of the toys. I've been very tempted. I've heard they're not put together well. But the two that I've been tempted with, I would love to have a Batman, some of the heroes, but every Target I've gone to hasn't had the heroes. So the two villains, surprisingly enough, I don't want a Joker. Scarecrow didn't look that good. But the two that look really nice to me are King Shark and Mr. Freeze, especially when you put the helmet on Mr. Freeze. And they have like Tigers battle, you could put Batman on Ace the Bat Hound, Large Dog, and other type. They have like a Skeletor type castle you can buy. They had lunch boxes. This was a great comic book. I thoroughly enjoyed it. A lot of fun. I liked that it was all original content. Of course, it had to be because these toys are freaking brand new. Sort of reminded me about DC Superpowers when that comic came out by Jack Kirby and was launching their toy line, and Marvel Secret Wars, which launched their toy line. Very retro-y feel to it. Then we have Nightwing Annual. This was the only one book that I hadn't read from the rebirth to catch up to where I currently was. And I wish I would have read this in order because this field. In more of the story from the ongoing, when Dick was tracking down the dark web entity to Gotham, this entity was projecting false news all over Gotham and everyone was eating it up. Dick and Barbara were teamed up to try and take out the entity, in which the proposal comes to Grayson to enter a race to save his friends, including Vicki Vale. There was some interesting flirting between Dick Grayson and Vicky, with it was almost creepy because he's like, "Hey, Bruce has been with this girl." I don't know, it was weird. And but then he shows his true love for Barbara Gordon, of course. So if you like those team ups with Bruce, I mean Dick Grayson and Barbara Gordon, this is something you got to put on your list. It also had some interesting looks into the dark web and what we're seeing on a lot of now, which is fake news. Sorry, I have to take a drink. The next one is a 4 out of 5. So all of these have been 4 out of 5 so far. The Life of Captain Marvel. This was the mini series before the new launch of Captain Marvel. And I've had this on the nightstand, well, actually the couch stand, to read for quite some time. It had a art germ cover, and I was really drawn to it. I really enjoyed this. This gives the backstory of Carol's family life in Maine, growing up with her brothers and abusive father. I don't remember if this new abuse is retroactive. In other words, they just came up with it, or if it's been discussed before. And I've been reading some old Miss Marvel, but I don't remember her father coming into it. She saves her brother from a drunk driving crash, but now he can't take care of himself, and now it's up to her mom to take care of her son. She came into town and caused some grief with the brother, which may not have happened if she never came back to town. She is taking a break from the Avengers because she is becoming too violent. She was beating some villains to death, and that's when Tony said, "Hey, you need to take a break." So she might be there for a while helping her mom, Maine. We have Catwoman, the new series, 2 through 4. The Catwoman defeats the hired Catwomen that framed her, and there was a whole group. I thought this part of the plot with the many Catwoman that ended in issue 1 was going to be like a long story, but it tend the many Catwoman part of it, not the main villainess, but the many Catwoman, it tended to wrap itself up shorter than I thought. The one girl is tortured by Mrs. Creed. She's the creepy politician woman. She's actually torturing one of the Catwomans for revealing some stuff to Catwoman. The son of the Senator Creed wants to allow Selina in town and make an agreement, but Selina refuses. So, the son's corrupt too. She is there to visit Maggie, her sister, who was tortured by Black Mask, and her husband was killed. So this is very pre-52-ish, because that Black Mask did do this stuff to her sister and her husband. The senator says he is retiring because he got a bout of cancer. He's the only one that seems normal in this family. The woman is stealing body parts and sewing them onto her face, and being like a politician wife, she's very creepy. And the kids also seem messed up. And his wife is thinking about killing him like she did her first husband. The doctor is working for Mrs. Creed is treating Maggie. So that's interesting. Mrs. Creed is the main villain of the story. I really liked it. That was the last 4 out of 5. So we had all those books were 4 out of 5. We get into the 5 out of 5s, and we have Fantastic Four Annual number 3. This is from the first series, original volume 1. I read this as a True Believers. I don't think I own it, this particular issue. It's one that I think is a very good book to pick up. But it was an absolutely fantastic wedding issue for Sue and Reed. I never read it before, but Dr. Doom got every key villain at the time, especially Fantastic Four villains, but there were a lot of others, to attack at the same time before the wedding. He basically heard about the wedding and said, "Can't have that business." So he had like some mind-altering ability, telepathic ability to take over a villain and project their hatred towards the Fantastic Four, especially Reed and Sue, to try to stop the wedding. If it wasn't for the Watcher's intervention. Wait, what did we say? Watcher intervening? Yeah, the Watcher doesn't intervene, but he did intervene. Stan and Jack, he basically gave a contraption to Reed that allowed him to stop the mind control and basically help. Because during this whole time of mind control, all the other heroes in the Marvel Universe, including Sergeant Fury, Spider-Man, Daredevil, X-Men, Iron Man, Thor, and Captain America, worked their way to try to fight the villains and keep this wedding on track. At the very end, Stan and Jack even turned. They were turned around at the door, so they could not even get into the wedding. They were there with their top hats and trying to get in the wedding, and they were like, "We can't let these fools into the wedding." So they never even got to go to the wedding of Sue and Reed. Very fantastic issue. I think people that appreciate Silver Age comics, if you haven't read this, you really need to track it down. If you're a fan of the Fantastic Four, you really need to track it down. If you're a fan of any of the wedding issues, it's something that you really need to track down. So I think if you're like me, when I read a comic, I don't like pretend I'm in 2019. I don't. I try to go back to like 1963 or whatever issue. If it was in the 40s, I try to put myself in the 40s and think about what it was like at that time, and I put myself in that mind mode, and I just tend to get sucked into that world. And that's why you'll never hear me ever say this is a product of its time or it doesn't hold up, because to me, they all hold up. They're all history, and I just love every bit of it. And I'm able to adjust my mind and imagine what it was like to be a kid in that time and picking up a comic for the very first time. And I understand the decades very well, so I didn't like come into it late in the game and get my mind fixated on a certain time period. I love comics in the current, I love them in the past, and I adjust my mind accordingly, and thank God I can do that. And thank God that I don't say, or I never say, this is a product of its time. I'm glad I'm able to adjust to that time and still enjoy the haircuts and the slang of the past and learn about past than where I wasn't even born in, and try to place myself based on the history books that I've read into that time period and just absorb that comic for what it is and just love it. Good comic. Another 5 out of 5. American Carnage number 1 from Vertigo. This is about an agent that's undercover, and she is getting questioned, kind of like in a courtroom, about the death of her partner, who was killed by a white supremacist group. And this causes her, once she gets released, to find an old agent that is sort of drinking, and he was fired for almost getting a kid killed accidentally. Didn't look like it was on purpose, but he got released. And because of that, he goes undercover to try to find out if there is this famous author that is leading a white supremacist group, and he goes undercover to figure that out. Really enjoyed it. We then get into another DC comic. This is from the Bendis Jinx World cover number 2 through 4. Absolutely love it in this. This is like using the medium to its maximum capabilities. It's exploring the medium because it's about a spy type story, but it's about comic books because one of the spies is recruited in, and he's an artist and writer of a comic, a samurai comic. And in this particular issue, the artist is getting beaten to death by another spy in Turkey. He flashes back to when he arrived at the convention, and the agent is waiting to give him his ride to the convention. He wanted nothing to do with her, but she said she needed him to give a pin to the president, and he did. And that pin was able to track him, and they were able to find out what was going on with that. We then find a second mission. He was able to follow an artist, and this artist is another artist in another country, and he's a spy too. And he was told to spy on this spy to learn more about who he's a spy for, and he gets caught and beaten to a pulp by this artist, and he kind of throws this guy off because he starts mentioning Jack Kirby, and this guy stops torturing him. He then gets away, and then goes home and hangs with his artist friend while he's working on his new comic ideas. He keeps thinking about the spy lady, and issue 4 has a fantastic Stan Lee tribute, which documents the meetings between Brian Michael Bendis and Stan Lee. What a great tribute. We then have Dead Rabbit number 1, the comic book that's never going to have a number 3, but I absolutely loved it. A thief of banks and evil people, he basically robs thieves, and he robs banks, has retired to take care of his wife, who's in a wheelchair. I don't know if she, what she has, but she's not in good shape. He works at a Walmart type location and sees a guy buying materials like he's going to dispose of a body, and follows him as the Dead Rabbit. He takes out these two villains as he tracks this guy down. There's an organization that realizes that he's back and wants to kill him for all the money he has taken from them. He goes back home and his wife knows something is going on, and then she has a seizure. To be continued in issue number 2. And if you're wondering more about why this book was canceled, it was canceled because of the name Dead Rabbit and its similarity to a drinking. It is a bar, but they also published a book that had similar premises for recipes for their liquor. So it's a very interesting correlation, and they got basically a cease and desist. And I don't know when they can republish this, if they could republish it under another title, or if we'll ever see it. And it's very strange because we've just saw 2 issues of Juke Joint, and Juke Joint was canceled. I got my DCBS email, really liked Juke Joint. Similar type thing, except they weren't getting sued. This was the one about voodoo and all this stuff, and an actual bar like a juke joint, and it was a callback to a woman, the author, who has been abused before. So it was about abuse, and it was a fictional tale, but it was told through her eyes to deal with the abuse that she had gone through before. And we got 2 issues into that, and it's now canceled. And she issued a statement. I read the statement, and she said that she'd like to continue it at a different time, but she did not give any reason why they were stopping. I don't know if it was like an emotional thing, or if the artist couldn't draw it anymore for health reasons, or what was going on. But the 5 out of 5 Dead Rabbit. So let's go over the 5 out of 5s again. Fantastic Four Annual Number 3, Volume 1. Loved it. American Carnage Number 1 from Vertigo. Loved it. Cover Number 2 through 4. Jinx World, DC Comics. Loved it. From Image Comics, the top one was Dead Rabbit Number 1. Absolutely loved it. I hope you enjoyed this episode. I hope you don't think I'm some kind of asshole for crying and showing my emotions, but I just start thinking about it and it gets me real emotional. I like I said, I can't imagine what he's going through. And it's one of those things that you just can't, I don't know how you could shake it. I mean, you could try to get back to some sense of normalcy, but it's gonna take a while, I imagine. And I'm sorry, John. I really am. So I hope you enjoyed this episode, at least the part where I talk comics. And if you want to send me comments or questions, you can always tweet me at Mike Myers Brunch. I have several questions queued up. Yours will get put in the queue, and they'll provide lots of entertainment for me in the future as I get to answer them. I really enjoy the questions. Thank you, Nick, for providing a slew of questions. I did get your other questions about top five lists, and I will be covering those in future episodes. They're in the queue. I didn't plan on talking about what happened to John. I thought I was gonna last 2 minutes, and it lasted a lot longer. I never have a plan for these, other than I know I'm gonna do some weekly reads. I kind of just go with the flow of what happened during the week. You can reach me at Mike Myers Brunch on the Twitter machines. Probably the best place to get a hold of me. But the best place if you need to say something wordy to me is mike@comicbooknoise.com. That is my email. And if you want to contribute to the show, you can through comicbooknoise.com, Patreon, and you can find them at the Comic Book Noise Derek's page. That's how you could contribute to the show because Derek supports this show, hosts this show, pays for this show. So if you enjoy any of the Geek Brunch or DC Noise podcasts and you want to help financially, you help Derek because he pays for this stuff. And he was just kind enough way back in 2007 to say, w it's so weird how this podcast, Mike M's Weekly Reads, came about because it really started off with Derek, me sending him my weekly reads and ranking them. So it's weird that this podcast turned out to be what I was originally sending to Derek Coward. And Derek said, "You know, Mike, you have a lot to say about comics. I think you should start your own podcast, my friend." And that's how Rocky Mountain Comic Book Noise came about. And that's how I met a few people and started to go on the forums. And I met Heath, and then Geek Brunch spawned out, and then other people spawned out. I met Eric and from Geek Brunch, which then spawned out and to DC Noise, and Eric unfortunately passed, and I had met Keith from DC Noise, and he became a co-host, and I think Daryl was just listened to a few episodes and wanted to join us, and he became co-host, and I don't know, it's like a trail of people that I've met and absolutely love, and anyway, it's just weird how that short little list I used to publish on Derek sent to send to Derek became this podcast because I never really planned it that way. But you know what? I really enjoy doing this podcast because I don't know. It's like a thing I could do on Friday, walk around the house before Barb gets home. I usually get home early because I work 10-hour shifts, sort of. I could get early out on Friday and just sit there and decompress before the weekend starts and just get my thoughts out for comic books that week. And what I'm going to do right now is go open up three boxes of comic books and start the weekend. So I want to thank you for listening. And this podcast is located on geekbrunchpodcast.com. And please let me know what you think. And I appreciate those who listen. I appreciate those of you who pay attention to what I really have to say and what I don't know, it's a lot of gibberish in the terms of format, and you put up with it. You put up with my bullshit. Is I just sit here, walk around the house, and talk into a mic, and some people like it, and that's good. I know that the people that do listen, though, know that I love comics, and I hope they hear my excitement for the medium because they are such a big part of my life. They are who I am, and they are who I will be the rest of my life. And the friends that I have met that I am so close to are all through comics. So I want to thank you for listening and peace out. I'll talk to you in a few. Bye.